Hi, everybody. I hope you are great. I just want to say, one, thanks for getting on board. Thanks for supporting this podcast as much as you can. If you think it's worth listening to, share it with friends. I want to grow this into something significant because I want to keep doing good work and talking with good people and sharing good ideas and good messages because I want to create a little bit of a ripple effect around the world in the tiny little pond that is Craig Harper, and hopefully you can help me do that. If you think what I'm doing and what we're doing is of value or service to others, and you can get on board that train, then I would love your support and I'd love you to do that. I also want to thank Max's, who is, of course, my sponsor for this show, Max's and Maxine's, Australia's leading brand of sports nutrition for guys, and Maxine's, of course, for girls. They're Australian-owned, Australian-made. They've been around for about 3 decades, and I use them all the time. I know people say that when they do sponsorship stuff, but I actually do. I use Max's stuff every day, and I find them to be amazing. Of course, I eat normal food and healthy food, but I supplement with protein powder. I have a few bars. I have a few cookies. I have a few drinks, and they are a big part of what I do and how I stay in shape. So now, if you want to get on board the Max's train or the Maxine's train, go to www.maxes.com or www.maxinesburn.com. Best supplements in Australia, I think, high quality ingredients, create great results, help me stay where I'm going, go where I'm going, help me stay in shape, and they can become part of your regime as well. So thanks, Maxes. Thanks, Maxines. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the U Project. It's Harps. I'm just being fucking bossed around by the red, the strawberry blonde on the end of the table who keeps fucking telling me to do things. And have you responded to this person? Have you done that? Did you do that email? Did you ring that person? Why are you so bossy? Is it because I'm like fucking unreliable and
not at all.
Somewhat laconic?
Not at all. It's just because you're busy.
Is that...
That's why.
Like lazy?
No, busy.
I'm a bit lazy.
Slightly different.
Do you know what? I'm lazy with shit I don't like, which is most things. So thank you for bossing me around. Sherelle McMahon, do you like being bossed around? Do you need to be bossed around?
I probably operate better when I'm bossed around, although what I will say that it is most enjoyable seeing you being bossed around.
Well,
like most enjoyable. This is the most fun I've had in quite some time.
If honestly, I wouldn't do the stuff I do. Wouldn't have a podcast, I'd be doing 3 talks a year.
Way too kind.
I'm definitely not. Yes. You know I'm not that kind. Melissa runs everything, so she is the wind beneath my you are the wind. You're the wind beneath my professional wings. You just keep the organisation rolling. Sherelle McMahon played 118 games for Australia, 14 million for the Melbourne Vixens and Melbourne Phoenix. She was captain of the Melbourne Phoenix, captain of the Melbourne Vixens, captain of the Australian Diamonds, and in my opinion, one of the best athletes in the last 2 decades in Australia, and definitely one of the best athletes, definitely, that I worked with. So, Macca, thank you for travelling all the way across Melbourne to come here to the thriving metropolis of Hampton and sit in the U Project HQ.
No worries. It's great to be here, and that's a lovely way to be introduced, actually.
I say all the time, people ask me, because I work with lots of athletes and teams over the years, and you're always, Robert Harvey and you are always in my top three because both very skilled, but both a bit manic, a bit crazy, a bit OCD. Well, Banger was OCD, very OCD. Like he would finish the season and then they would have 6 to 8 weeks off, and then he would literally start training with me 1 week later.
Yeah.
I go, mate, you know you don't have to. Yeah, no, I just don't want to go too far backwards. I'm like, there's not much chance of that.
That ain't going to happen.
Yeah, that
ain't. Well, I wasn't quite like that, I don't think. But when I was on and when I was training, it was full on.
You had a little bit of white line fever?
Just a touch.
Yeah, just a touch.
Actually, one thing that I always remember, because we obviously spent a lot of time together throughout my career.
We did.
When you started training the Melbourne Phoenix, first of all.
Yes.
And one of the things I'll always remember you saying is just how different it was to be in our change room prior to a match.
Weird.
As opposed to a male change room. Mm-hmm. And you'd only up until that time pretty much worked with team athletes.
Yeah, dudes.
Of a, yeah,
yep.
For men. and just how weird it was that we weren't like banging our chest and headbutting the wall before we went out.
And fucking, yeah, like tearing telephone books and eating fucking charred animal flesh and just frothing at the mouth. I'm like, what the fuck are these women doing?
We were more inclined. We would just sit around and chat about, you know, what had happened the night before or what's going on in the weekend or probably fake tan or whatever we were talking about. And I think you were in the room, particularly early on, freaking out.
There was a couple of, I can't even remember what year it was, maybe 2001 or two with the Phoenix, but there was a couple of, practice games. It was all pretty laconic and you did fine, but the first game of the season rolled around and I remember turning up, coming into, you know, the change rooms or the warm-up room and all the girls sitting around and I thought I'd got the time wrong because I'm thinking, I'm pretty sure the game starts in, I don't know, I mean, this was an hour before, but even fucking 20 minutes before, just everyone's just like, literally some girls were reading magazines and... No, literally reading magazines chatting and giggling. And this is not sexist. This is literally what happened. Back me up, Macca.
No, it's true. You're just not making it up. You're
just
actually
so laid back. I'm like, we're fucked. We're fucked. I go, I need to do something. I'm thinking. And then I'm looking at the coaching staff. They don't seem to be worried. I'm like, what is going on? And then they kind of, you know, they just ambled out and went out for their warm-up, did their warm-up, pretty slick, pretty on point, pretty. And then the game started and they all just went berserk. And I'm like, oh, okay. And you won. You won by a lot.
We won by a lot. And, you know, I've reflected on that quite a bit over my journey because I think it's true that it's kind of, you know, it's hard to be up all the time. And I know obviously different athletes do different things, but... for us, what worked is to have a really relaxed environment connections for us were crucial. Yeah. There was a lot of loyalty back then. I mean, it's probably shifted away from that a little bit now, but those connections were super important to us. And we were able to have that fun with each other. But when it was time to work, it was almost like literally flicking a switch and we could do what needed to be done.
I reckon actually much smarter than men because... You know, you think about even for AFL, I remember, you know, so when I was with St Kilda, so you're obviously got to play four 30-minute quarters, give or take. So 120, that's a long game.
Yes.
Right? That's a long game. And then if an hour before the game that's going to take 3 hours by the time you chuck in breaks.
Yes.
An hour before, your central nervous system is fucking through the roof and you're producing adrenaline and cortisol and all the bits and pieces that come with that euphoric heightened state of I'm ready to run through a brick wall. No wonder guys were fucked by the end of halftime. Like, it's just not a good way to manage yourself. And I think, like, there's this idea in sports science called the inverted U principle, which talks about the appropriate level of arousal for that task or sport. So obviously, you know, for throwing a javelin, for throwing a discus, for running 100 meters, you need 10 out of 10 arousal.
Yeah.
For playing table tennis, maybe, I don't know, actually I was going to say low, but probably not, probably 7 or 8, but for lawn bowls, 1 or 2 in terms of arousal. You know, which is not to say that they can't be focused, but the thing is about sports which take, you know, quite a while, is that, you know, you're managing your mind and your body and your energy and your skill and your nervous system, you know, for an extended period of time. So getting out there or being fired up an hour before just doesn't work. But what, I don't know whether or not it was intentional or it's just how you girls were wired. But you just did not waste any energy.
No, I don't necessarily think it was intentional. I think that was just part of what it was. Mm. But, you know, when I first started playing with that group, I was really young. I grew up in the country, country Victoria, moved to Melbourne when I was 16, and I was just super naive about the world, basically, but certainly elite sport. And I came and started playing with that group only a couple of years after that. I think I was 19. And it was just how they did it. You know, when they trained, they bloody trained hard. And this was at the time when we were not completely not being paid at all to play.
Yeah.
But what I learned and the way to kind of get the best out of yourself while still having fun, I think is really relevant even now that I work at the complete other end where most of the athletes I work with now were fully professional.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you're working at the Vixens as an assistant.
Yes.
And you told me you want Simone's job before we... No, you didn't.
I'll try and get rid of her.
Oh, fuck, don't say that, Simone. She didn't. She said she loves you and she loves her role, but watch out. she didn't say anything like that. What's been the biggest learning for you stepping out of the playing shoes into the coaching shoes? Because I don't think being a good player necessarily translates to being a good coach. And you were a good player, but that doesn't guarantee you're going to become a great coach, does it?
No, absolutely not. And I spent a bit of time. So my last season playing with the Melbourne Vixens was 2013, so 6 years ago now, unbelievably. Mm. And I spent a bit of time doing a little bit of coaching at different levels with the Vixens and some other stuff, but also broadcasting. Mm. So in a way... you know, in the commentary side of it, you had to look at the game a little bit differently than when you were a player because you know, quite focused on one area.
Yeah.
So commentary probably helped a little bit in terms of how you look at the game from a coaching perspective. But probably the biggest learning I took was, you're right, like when I was a player, I liked to do.
Yes.
So, you know, I could certainly be vocal with what I was doing, but most of it was kind of setting a standard and an expectation because of what I did and how I behaved. Mm. So, you know, you can have an influence on that as a coach, but it has to be through what you say rather than your actions. So for me, that was a bit of a challenge because I was much more wide to do and lead by example rather than the other
leading
side of it.
Leading by doing rather than leading by saying.
Yeah, so that has been a massive shift for me and, you know, I'm still learning. Obviously, I will continue to. But that part of it for me has been and just how needy athletes are.
How? Explain that. Unpack that.
Yeah, I look back on my time and I'm like, I definitely was like that as well. In terms of the feedback that they want, they constantly want that feedback and they want to know exactly what happened and what went right and what went wrong and what we're going to do on this play. And if this happens, what's our go-to?
Mm.
Which is all fine, but, you know, it's also encouraging them to keep having their own flair on it and their own spin on it. So to give them the space to be able to do that, but also the structures that they can work on and work within. And even things like working in a team environment like that, I kind of, in my time away, I'd kind of forgotten how important the routine is.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think back on this now and I didn't think I was very superstitious or I was kind of a bit of a fly by the seat of my pants type of gal, but I wasn't at all. Like I came out of that structured environment and it was really challenging.
Mm.
Because since I was 16 to 30, so it was basically 20 years, I was told almost every minute of my day where I needed to be and who
what
you're talking to
do
and what you'll be doing. And so that was a kind of a challenge to come out of that. So another kind of, not a learning perhaps, but a reminder that, you know, sometimes those things and routines that we have, you know, when I was finished playing, I vividly remember every time I ran out on court, it was when we won the premiership in 2009. So one of the last years I played, Caitlin Thwaites, who's a champion Australian Diamonds, was goal shooter and I was goal attack. So she'd run out onto the court first. So then I would be called out and I'd run and then I'd have to do like two little skips and then give her a high 10.
Wow.
And I don't – like I remember doing that every game.
Yeah. But you didn't plan it.
No, I didn't really plan it. But now I look back at that and I was like I 100% had to do that. And so now when the athletes have – these little habits and quirks. And sometimes I think maybe I need to change that up, make it different. And you do obviously need to do that, but there are some things that you absolutely need to keep the same to provide that kind of security, I guess.
And I think also when somebody's got a routine or a ritual, no matter how insane it might look from the outside in, Melissa. No, not that you're OCD. No. But if it works for that person, you know, it's like this is a big stretch, but my mum lights candles for me because she's as Catholic as the Pope, right? And my mum thinks that by lighting candles for me, God bless her, and let's hope she's right,
that I'll live a long, happy, healthy life and that'll keep me safe and perhaps I'll even come back into the kingdom of God, because she'd really like that. And but I would never think of, and that gives my mum a sense of comfort,
yes,
and surety and, you know, peace of mind. I would never try to talk her out of that. In fact, I encourage her. I go, Mum, you need to light a couple of extra candles this week. I've got some shit on. She's like, I'm on it. Because somewhere way back in the back of my Catholic mind, I'm going, you never know, Harps, this could be.
And I think that there's an element also of, in whatever we're doing, whether it's lighting candles or whether it's skipping and giving your teammate a high five or if it's, you know, getting up at a certain time to do your training or your work, whatever it is, I think there's an element too of, for me, you know, you've got a goal that you want to get to. Mm. What if I don't do that and it has an impact? I'm just going to do it.
Mm.
Like, so what if your mum decided, yes, I'm not going to light a candle and just touch wood?
Yeah.
Something happened. She'd never forgive herself. So, and I think that's how we form these things, because we think, well, I'm going to tick that box because, you know, 100%. These things could actually have a big impact.
Well, that's right. And when you believe something, whatever the something is, no matter how illogical that something might be from a purely objective scientific perspective, where you go, well, let's put that under the microscope, that's fucking silly. Like you high-fiving Caitlin or high-tenning Caitlin, like really.
Yeah, high-tenning, not high-fiving, like high-tenning.
You know intellectually that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but emotionally, no. Because that would, based on your operating system, that could fuck you up if you didn't do that. Imagine if she just turned her back on you. Yeah. You'd be like, what are you doing? What are you coming back?
No, she was all in. We never spoke one word about it, but she was all in on the high 10.
That is,
we were on the same level, but we'd never spoke about it.
You know, it like routines and rituals, like you are, Melissa is the fucking queen. She's look up routines and rituals. There'll be
Maybe I need to take a, I may need to look up that.
But I think also because you were very, I wouldn't have called you OCD. I would have called you very much just a perfectionist in what you did and the way that you did it. But I think one of the differences between being in the team and outside the team, like you're in the team now, but you're not really, you're coaching versus playing, is when you're on the floor, you're in the micro, but when you're the coach, you're in the macro, and now you're looking at the totality of what's happening on the court. Whereas you, when you're a player, you are a bit of what's happening on the court. And so you can't, running around with GA or GS on your chest, have the same perspective as Sherelle, the coach, sitting in the stands looking at all seven players running around and trying to figure out what's happening and what's not happening. And so, yeah, it's a completely different perspective that you have, you know. And also, do you get frustrated because in the moment you can't fix or change the result, or you can't fix what's going on?
Sometimes, and people often ask me, do I miss it? I certainly miss elements of it. But I feel like I'm in this new role and I am all in. I don't wish I was out on court. But is there elements of frustration? I don't know. Maybe there is a strange kind of feeling of not being able to influence something in the way I have for many, many years. Definitely. Yeah.
So, in terms of, like, I feel like some people, and this is in business and life, so I sit and coach a lot of people, not so much one-on-one anymore, but a lot of people, you know, in groups and audiences, and a lot of people, to me, seem very teachable and very coachable, and then other people, for a range of reasons, not at all.
Yep.
Like, they turn up because they kind of think they should turn up, maybe. And even people who've turned up one-on-one with me over the years who go, like they only want to be coached if I tell them what they want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Yep. Or if I say something that reinforces their own opinion of themselves.
Yeah.
Yep. Right? Have you found that with athletes?
Oh, definitely.
That some are much easier to coach? What makes someone, and I think this is important for our listeners, because I reckon if you're not teachable, then good luck trying to learn and grow and evolve. If you're not teachable and you're not willing to, one, learn, and two, unlearn.
Yeah. Yeah.
What makes someone more teachable?
I think for me what makes them more teachable is the ability to self-reflect.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can give someone information and help them on a way, but if they don't have that ability to kind of apply that to themselves, then it's kind of not going to work. I remember having a conversation with an athlete that was, you know, kind of a bit up and down with their form. But when they were good, they were an absolute world beater. And, you know, I was just saying, well, what are the sorts of things that you do when you're playing well? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And she just kind of looked at me blankly and was like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, flip side.
Yeah.
What's happening when things aren't going well? And same thing, I don't know. So that type of person is, I find, really hard to coach and is not probably that coachable or teachable because it's difficult for them to kind of apply it to what they're doing. And I feel like you need to have that insight. And sometimes it's hard to have that. I don't know whether that's a protective mechanism. You would have had heaps more experience of that sort of thing with me than me. But yeah, that it was. I was like, really? Because I spent most of my career critiquing what I did, but whether it was in training, playing, off the court, on the court, whatever it was, it was that part of it was really important.
It's virtually impossible for us as individuals to self-reflect completely objectively because the human experience is subjective. So, I'm always looking at shit through the Craig filter and the Craig processing center and the Craig fears and ideas and background and education and beliefs and values. So I'm trying to, which is why it's absolutely crucial that we have people that care about us, know us, love us, or at the very least that we trust and respect to say, all right, I can't be objective or totally objective about me or this endeavor or this task or this role that I'm playing. Can you please give me some input? That's the theory. The problem with that is nobody wants to be told that they're not doing well and nobody wants to be criticized or nobody wants their flaws or faults or shortcomings to be pointed out. But I truly believe it's the people who can put up their hand and go, tell me what I'm not doing well and I will take it on board, really. I won't get offended. I won't be mad at you.
Mm.
And this, lots of people go, yeah, I do that. No, you fucking don't. No, you fucking don't. Like this lady, I nearly wrote a bad comment the other day. This lady wrote on Facebook.
I love your responses to some of your Facebook messages.
This lady wrote on Facebook, hi everyone, real deal, tell me exactly what you think. What don't you like about me?
Oh.
Then there was a succession of 100 people going, you're amazing.
Yeah.
You're amazing. No, I love everything. I'm like, fuck off. That was what she wanted.
That was an exercise in just, yeah.
That was like a reverse psychology way of getting her ego. I'm like, if you really want, like, okay, I felt like writing, okay, here's something I don't like about you, that you are so insecure that you had to ask that on social media to have a whole heap of people stroke.
Social media, geez, it's a horrible place.
Well, it's a platform, isn't it?
And, it's a platform.
It's just ridiculous. Mm. Like the thing is, we're all flawed and we've all got strengths and weaknesses and we all do some things well and some things not well. But if you surround yourself with a fucking fan club, it's the best way to implode and it's the best way to stay insecure and deluded, and it's the best way not to grow and learn and evolve and exploit your potential, which doesn't mean you need people around you berating you or chastising you, but rather going, okay, so when you did this, that was great. I think that really worked for these reasons. This was okay, but maybe you could do that, but I think this didn't work at all. Yep. These are the reasons why.
Yep.
It's not like, oh, you're shit. It's like, I think you could do this better.
Yes.
This is my reasoning behind it. And by the way, I'm more objective about you because I'm not you. At the same time, love your guts. Here's a hug. Go and fucking fix
go
it.
Go and do it.
Go and fix it.
Which is where the conversation went with this athlete after, you know, her kind of going, I don't know. Because as you say, sometimes it is really, really difficult. But my experience is that if you've got someone who is at least open to those conversations, then they're the ones who are going to grow far more than the ones who are kind of going, oh, I don't know and I don't really want to look at myself because it's too scary.
One of the things that I've spoken about a bit on this podcast and talk about, do you want Melissa to get you a tissue? She'll go grab you one. Mac has got a bit of a runny nose, thanks to me. One of the things that we've spoken about, bring the whole box. Let's spoil her. One of the things that we've spoken about here and I speak about a lot is identity. And when we get our sense of self from what we do or our sport or our bank balance or our body or our pretty face or our big muscles or our brand or our title or our academic. Did you know I'm doing a PhD?
Yes,
or our academic? who's insecure? And I guess that one of the challenges for a lot of athletes coming off the back of their career is all of a sudden they don't know who they are. Mm. Like, well, I'm not the netballer, I'm not the footballer, I'm not the Olympian now. Mm. I was the Olympian, but now I'm not. Did you have a sense of either loss or grief or perhaps, I don't know, disillusion when you finished?
I wouldn't describe it like that. The finish to my career was a little bit interesting. I was heading into a World Cup and I snapped my Achilles 3 months before that. So I was the captain of the team. We just lost in Delhi at the Commonwealth Games.
You only snapped it once, right?
I only snapped it once. Yeah, so that was my only major injury.
That was I was there. I was on the side of the court and I was 15 feet away from you.
Yeah.
And you snapped your Achilles and you turned around with the most fucked off look on your face.
I remember that game.
She turned around like, who the fuck kicked me in the Achilles or in the... You turned around like you had just been shot or someone had done something to you, but there was no one behind you. Then you looked confused and then you went, hang on, I know. Oh, fuck my Achilles.
This is not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, as I was being wheeled into the operating theatre the next day, the surgeon, I was like, you know, the World Cup's in 3 months. I'll be right, won't I? And he just laughed and laughed.
Yeah, nah, champ.
I was hardly even walking by then. But, so I had that and then I had my first babies. I had Xavier kind of as I was rehabbing that and then came back from that. So there was a whole lot of layers of challenges kind of for the last year that I had.
Mm.
And so I kind of came to the end of that year after I'd snapped my Achilles, after I had my baby, and then played again and struggled with the logistics of everything physically. Oh, my God, I've never experienced pain like I have trying to do a running session after having a baby. Mm. My pelvis just felt like it was going to snap in half.
Mm.
It was incredible. So there was a lot of mental challenges that came along with that. So when I got to the end of that year, it was pretty clear that that was it.
Mm.
So I didn't have a sense that it wasn't forced on me. It was just the right time. And, you know, I had my baby. I had a media career. I had stuff I was doing with Bianca Chatfield, who obviously you know very well and is a friend of this podcast.
Oh, she's an alumni. Unlike yourself, you fucking debutante.
Just a newbie. So, you know, I had lots to do, really busy, and things that really got my juices flowing in terms of that mentoring side of things. I had opportunity with that. I had some coaching, so I was still connected with the elite team and that environment. So it wasn't too bad for me kind of from a mental point of view. I've had to kind of reinvent why I train though and why I'm physically active. That was a real shock and I'm probably still going through that to be honest.
Last time we saw each other,
I need to be losing quite fine. A bit of... No,
she's
I don't.
She's just intimating visually that she visually doesn't... That you look fine.
I need to shed quite a few kegs.
You look fine. You're probably not going to do a 14 or 15 on the beep test anytime soon, but you look fine.
I never did that anyway, so...
I was just pumping up your tyres. Yeah, last time we met, you said, I find it hard to get motivated to train because you're kind of training for nothing.
Yeah.
Because you've spent your whole life exercising for a reason greater than fitness.
Yeah, that's right.
Or greater than just to be in shape.
Yeah.
Whereas if there is no specific measurable kind of athletic outcome, why the fuck would you go for a run?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you say about connecting yourself to your value and your self-worth to things. You know, for so many years, you know, I look in the mirror. This might be a bit gross for everyone, but I look in the mirror with, well, I've got no clothes on before I get in the shower. It's this habit that I've always had. I was told to do that as an athlete, as a 13-year-old athlete. I was working with Debbie Flintoff-King and Phil King.
Yes.
Working on my hurdles and stuff. And right back then I was told that I needed to lose a few skin folds. And they said one good way to do it is to look at yourself in the mirror because you get a pretty good feedback of that. Yep. And so since that age, I've equated and if I was fitter, generally speaking, I would be more successful in my endeavors. So a lot of what I did and my sense of how successful I was being and how I felt about myself was really attached to how I looked physically. And so, you know, I come off the back of that elite career and kind of living in that mindset for so many years. And then now I've got kids. I've got two kids now and... Just that whole, you know, I invested so much into me through that time and I love investing into something other than just me now. It's kind of a weird thing, and I do need to still get my head around it, because I absolutely, without any doubt, when I'm more physical, I feel better in on so many levels. So I need to be doing more. But I kind of put it off for some weird reason, and I think it does come back to that, well, why am I doing this?
Well, the life of an elite athlete is somewhat, as it needs to be, selfish.
Very, very.
The life of a mum is the opposite.
Yeah, that's true. It's
like
flip.
You're at the opposite end of the emotional spectrum. Yep. Like, this is all about me, and this is not about me at fucking at all.
So that was a weird thing when I came back with Xavier too, because I would literally be breastfeeding him before a game. Mm. I would literally – that would have been a shock for you in the change rooms before a game. That.
Yep, yep. No, I turned straight around and walked straight back out.
Literally was breastfeeding him then, and then would come off the court and breastfeed him again. Mm. So, you know, that you're right. And that was even – that was a bit of a –
that would have been a conflict.
Real
that would
conflict.
Have been in a turmoil. Yeah. Just quickly, without throwing anyone under the bus or being – not talking about individuals specifically, but how many girls do you think in – well, let's go with netball because that's your kind of home ground. Like, what percentage of the girls that currently play would have significant issues, do you reckon, around body dysmorphia, the way they look, the way they feel about their body image, and potentially – now, this is coming from someone who's always had body image issues and always had eating issues. So I'm putting up my hand.
Yep.
I'm going, I'm the fucking captain of the ship.
Yeah.
But eating issues, eating disorders, body image stuff. What percentage do you think?
God, it'd probably be hard for me to put a percentage on it. It would be high.
It'd be high, wouldn't it?
Yeah, would be high.
Do you think that for elite athletes in general, maybe girls more than boys? Like, I remember, can I say this? I'm going
to
say it.
Find a way to say
it. I'm going
to
say it. So I coached, I've coached a bunch of Olympians, but one of the, I won't say her name, but this girl, I won't say the sport, but it involved a pool and it involved makeup and a peg on the nose. And and I trained her. And now this girl was in very, very good shape. Of course, she trained with her team. And when I first started working with this girl, I'm like, that's not a sport. And then I saw it and I went, fucking how hard is this sport?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So obviously we're talking about synchronized swimming. Yeah. I won't say who it was. But I thought it was borderline a joke. And if you don't go, like I went and watched them train with this Russian coach.
Oh my God.
Like beasts.
Yeah.
And hard and hard disciplined. Ass. And by the way, how fat are you? I'm like, what? What?
Is that literally what would have been said?
They were told they were fat. They were told, this girl was told who definitely, like
was
if
not.
You saw this girl walking around, you go, she's an athlete, she's gorgeous, she's lovely, she's perfect.
Yep.
Nope, fat.
No fat.
Nope, you're a fatty. And, you know, and used to, this was her biggest challenge is to, you know, and no wonder people would come away from experiences like that, you know, post-sport having emotional and mental issues around it. But it's kind of – but I guess the other side of that is that there are certain ridiculous criteria that do need to be met in some sports.
Definitely.
You know, like gymnastics is the same and obviously making weight in combat sports and rowing – and having a certain appearance in, as we were just talking about, synchronized swimming. And there is a correlation with body composition and performance.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And as I said, that was absolutely true for me. So when I was at my least fit, I wasn't playing well. I definitely wasn't. So there's absolutely a correlation. Whether it's, you know, obviously in team sports it's a little bit less probably than some of those sports, but there was that. And so... yeah, that was a bit of a challenge for me to kind of get through. And there's no doubt, I think when anyone goes through a shift in life and, you know, I kind of had two fairly major ones, becoming a mum and leaving the elite sport environment all in one go, you know, there's definitely challenges, huge challenges that go along with that in terms of, you know, and even my mum said it, and this actually brought it home for me perhaps. She was like, well, you know, now I'm not Sherelle, I'm not Sherelle's mum, the netballer. So who am I? So even my mum felt it a little bit. You know, what am I going to talk to people about now? So there is there's that element, and I think we all to different levels feel that. And for me, it's just it's crucial who you have around you. So I was incredibly lucky right throughout my career, and when I start, you know, my family life was really lovely in many, many ways. You know, I think there's a time you realize your family's not perfect.
Yep.
And that's a rude shock in some ways.
Yep.
You know, I think that there's, if you've got people around you, if you've put some stuff in place, regardless of what change it is that's happening, then you're better placed.
Did you consciously create a support crew, or did you just happen to end up with a good one?
No, no, I consciously did it. Absolutely.
How did you do that?
Like, well, here's one example of how I did it. So it's Michael, who used to live down the road here from you, actually, was a guy that I knew from high school in Rochester, so from the country. So he moved down here. Like, we were best mates, and then we were boyfriend and girlfriend for a while. So we were seeing each other. And it was after the grand final premiership that we won in my first year with the Melbourne Phoenix, 97. And we were everyone was so, like, beyond excited and going out and whatever. And he was like, he's like, oh, I'm just going to go and meet my mate. And I was like, what? Yeah. And I was like, aren't you going to come? And no, I'm going to. And then there was just a few things that he was like jealous or trying. It felt like he was trying to rein me in. And so that did not last very long. Michael and I, poor Michael. And I, God love Michael.
Cheryl McMahon has just thrown Michael under the bus. Well,
God love Michael. I mean, we had a great time together, and it's fun.
I don't try and undo it now.
No, the damage is done. But it wasn't right for me. Like, right for me. And that's an example of, you know, I could have continued on with a relationship like that. I could have kept people like that around me who felt like they were pulling me back. But you're not going to get to where you want to go when those are the people who are closest to you.
100%. So hang out with people who drag you up. Absolutely. And like, people think when I say there are going to be organic, natural relationships, of course. There are going to be professional relationships. There are also going to be relationships that are somewhat strategic. I have strategic relationships. But sometimes the thinking around that is, oh, that's bad. That's, well, you're, you know, that. No, of course we need strategic relationships, because some people, apart from the fact that, I mean, I'm not going to form a strategic relationship with somebody that I don't like or respect or I don't think they're a good person. But there are a few people in my life who my relationship with them is primarily strategic, in that they're a value to me and I'm a value to them to do what I want to do and get where I want to go. But it's open. It's very clear.
Yes.
We're not pretending.
No, that's
I'm not pretending, oh, we're mates, but I'm just fucking using you.
Yeah.
You know, and at the same time we get on, and there'll be other relationships which are just incidental and organic. But I think that and whether you're building a netball career or a business, or you're developing a fledgling career in some new industry, or you're trying to become the best athlete you can, it's super crucial that you consciously create a situation, circumstance, environment, and team around you that is going to maximize your chances. If success is your goal, if fulfilling your potential is your goal, if exploring your power and possibilities and all those fucking motivational things, if that's really what you want to do, you need more than training hard.
Yeah,
you training do. Hard's good. Eating well's good. You know, having potential's good. But if you don't have I'm not talking about a cheer squad who just rub you on the back and tell you what you want to hear. You don't need that. But if you don't have people around you who can call you on your bullshit, encourage you when it's warranted, educate you when needed, and kind of be there for you and give a shit about your outcomes, then you need to create that strategically as you did.
Yeah, you definitely do. And you know, one of the things that I've always struggled with was having difficult conversations.
Yes.
So, you know, I grew up and we didn't argue in our house. So there wasn't many differences of opinion in our house.
Maybe there was, but they just weren't addressed.
Correct. And, you know, one of my mums, God love her, Ollie, if you're listening, well, she won't be, because I'm sure she doesn't know how to download podcasts, but was, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Mm-hmm. So that was...
She went to Mary's school.
So that was kind of... And it was... really, you know, these are the things I talk about, you know, the environment that you kind of learn in.
Yeah.
That's the environment that I learned in. So then I come into an elite athlete environment you know, you have to have tough conversations. And particularly as a captain, as a leader, you absolutely have to have those. So I still find those conversations challenging, but I found a way to make it work because you have to.
How?
Well, for me, it's a bit of a shit sandwich.
Right.
So there's a bit of, you know, positive, here's the shit, and then, but, it, or this is how we're going to help, this is how we're going to work together, here's a strategy to help with that to move forward. So I can't, I don't usually hit people right between the eyes with just the shit, not the sandwich around it. And that's what works for me. It obviously doesn't work for other people. So that's, you know, another challenge when you're coaching people, obviously. Not everyone wants a shit sandwich. Sometimes they just want the shit. And so you've got to work out with your relationships who responds to which kind of delivery mechanism better. So, you know, in terms of surrounding yourself with people that are going to help you get where you want to go, sometimes those people actually aren't going to be the ones that you think that you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Sometimes those people are actually have to be the ones that really do challenge you because I think it's easy. You know, I've got a lot of really close friends who have a lot of same values as me, operate in a very similar way, but I actually get a lot out of interacting with people who are a bit not like me because it challenges me and encourages me to think outside where I am comfortable and where my natural is.
And I think also when you're very good at something like you were for most of your life with netball, or you get a kind of a false sense of security, and then you step away from it and all of a sudden – you're back to the bottom of the fucking ladder and you're like,
Oh, what?
You know, for me at the moment, I walk into this room at Monash where there's eight cubicles there and I'm one of the eight cubicles and seven other people who are all lovely, by the way, but couldn't give a fuck about me. Like, they're lovely. They're all great. They don't know who I am. They don't care. Not that I'm anyone, but it's, you know, on the weekend, we just spent the weekend in Perth with all these people who it's like hups and, you know, it's like fucking high fives and hugs and tears and connection and we're all in this. It's amazing. And then I rock back up to uni. I'm a shit kicker in the cubicle and I'm the dumbest one in the room and I'm the fucking lowest rung on the ladder. And you're like,
there's a slap to the face.
But it's true though. It's true. And I've told this once before, but I remember I did a gig in somewhere. And it went really well. And at the end of it, there was hundreds of people and, you know, like book signings and selfies and hugs and you're amazing. And you get this big fucking kind of love fest going on and you're like, yeah, you're right. I am awesome. And then I leave the event and I get back to the airport to fly back to Melbourne. I'm in the whatever the Virgin thing or the Qantas thing, one of them. And then I remember this girl walked towards me who was, I don't know, maybe 35 and looked like one of the girls or ladies that was just in one of my things. And I thought, no, no. And this lady looked at me and then she looked at me with such disdain that I was looking at her. Like I went, oh. And then I realized I'm just another fucking 55-year-old with a case walking through the Qantas Club. She don't give a. I'm fucking nobody. I'm just another old dude walking through this joint who's not special at all. And I went, oh yeah, that's right. Good. It's kind of environmental. Like in certain environments, you think you're a bit special, then the world goes, no, you're not fucking you're special
not.
At all.
You're not.
You were talking before about how you had a, like you were doing athletics and you're training with Debbie Flintoff King and her husband Phil, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember all of this, but I do remember you were a good athlete. Like you were a good. What did you do? And what was the story? And did you come to a crossroads?
Yeah, so it was more jumps, really. So and I think Debbie got quite excited when I ran over the hurdles because, as you can imagine, I had no fear going over the hurdles.
Yeah.
So there was never any kind of hesitation with a physical challenge for me. So, you know, going over the hurdles, she quite enjoyed that. So it was that and high jump and long jump and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of sat pretty comfortably. And, yeah, I was just, you know, I was just this country kid and I was lucky that my grandpa, my mum's dad, wrote to Debbie and said, you really need to coach this girl. She was running some coaching clinics throughout country Victoria, and so I went along, and then she chose 10 athletes out of however many, wow. you know, 1,000 that she coached across the...
How old were you?
I would have been 13 the first time I did that. And she took that group of us up to the AIS.
Wow.
And so, you know, I'd never been on a plane. Well, I was on a plane when I was 2 years old, but never been on a plane before, certainly never been to the AIS before or trained there. It was this huge kind of like, oh, my God. Mm. And it was amazing. You know, I think sometimes we look at people and think they're these amazing superheroes.
Yeah.
You could never do that. But yeah. Meeting Debbie Flintoff King, and at that time she'd kind of just come off the back of winning that gold medal, in the 400 hurdles, and as a young girl, it was like this light bulb moment for me to go, actually she's pretty nice and she's pretty normal, really. And if she can do something amazing like that, well,
yes,
maybe I can.
Yes.
And you know, I've got there's this very funny vision of me as this young 13-year-old. They interviewed me, and I just kept going, "Oh, she's very motivational. she's very inspirational."
You had your rural, and that's all. You had your rural voice going. Oh yeah, it's grouse in that. She's awesome in that. Yeah.
But I was so. I mean, that's what I was. I was shy, and I mean, I don't know. I probably still am in many ways. But I guess you learn. You've got to be a different person in some ways when you're doing the work that I do. But it really was this amazing experience for me that I came across someone at that time in my life, and she kind of showed me that with hard work and talent, and as you say, a myriad of other things as I learnt that need to go around it. But it was a real thing for me to go, wow, maybe I can really give this a shake. And I kept training with their group for a couple of years. And then I was invited to move down to Melbourne when I was 15 turning 16. To come to the VIS and go to Wesley College, which was very different to Rochi High, I can assure you of that.
Were you on a scholarship?
I was on a scholarship at Wesley. Fuck. Yeah, I certainly was. There was no way.
Fucking fancy pants.
No. See, I wasn't though. Far out, it was a shock to you know.
Going from Rochi High. Fucking
where Dad used to kick me out of the back of the electrical van. Where did you go? Sometimes. Wesley College in Prahran, just down the road here.
Is that the purple day?
Yeah, the purple. Yeah, nice. Purple. So I was living in North Ringwood, so I would catch the bus and the train and the bus into Wesley and then do my schooling and then go to training. I was exhausted. That's actually what I remember most about it. But it was, I don't know, my initial reaction, I mean, it was a long time ago, but my initial reaction there was when Mum had told me I was away with Debbie Flintoff King at the AIS, and I'd come home and she said, I had a phone call from the VIS and they want you to move to Melbourne for netball. And my first reaction was, no way.
You can say fuck.
No, I can't, because what if my mum accidentally listens to it? I can't. No, I'm not. Can you? I said no.
No. Oh. Ollie, she said no fucking way, but she won't say that.
I didn't actually say that to Mum. But, you know, they kind of, again, it's this support network. They encourage me. Give it a go. If it doesn't work out, you can always come home. And I think that I probably took that throughout the rest of my career and the rest of my life. And now, you know, I was on the board of the Melbourne Stars cricket team for the last 8 years. That's just finished. I was on the trust of Melbourne Olympic Park for a while. I've worked in lots of different areas and different environments. I MC events. And, you know, if I was to sit back and kind of think, that's what I would be doing, I would think, no bloody way, that's too scary. I don't want to take that risk. I don't want to take that chance. But probably I don't even know if it's really that conscious that I'm doing it, but I just feel like living your life to take chances and take opportunities, that's where the good stuff lies.
100%. You know what's obviously I'm not Sherelle McMahon and I've never been famous or great at anything, but I'm mildly well known. And what I love – like the biggest compliment for me is when I meet people and they're like, oh, you're actually just like on the podcast or you're just like your books.
Oh, there's no pretense with Craig Harper. Just that's like, for sure.
Oh, you know, your presentations, I saw you. You're exactly the same. Like I go, that is correct.
That is who I
am. If I had to fucking act every time I'd turn up, imagine trying to maintain a persona.
Terrible. Terrible.
You said something. Well, you said a lot of interesting things, but one thing. Now I know you've got to go. What time have you got to bolt to?
Well, I've got school pick up this afternoon. So two. You're probably sick of talking to me by now. But...
No, I love your guts. You're awesome, and you're a very reasonable rate. Thank you for giving us a discount. Yes, I can't believe we got you so cheap.
Yes.
Shout out to your management team. What is his name? That bloke sitting out there in the green room. Anyway,
tapping his watch.
I wanted to go on. Come on. I was going to say something bad then, just for a change. I want to talk about, just quickly, a lot of people that I talk to struggle with building confidence and self-belief. So you had a self-belief moment when you met Debbie Flintoff King and you went, oh, so she's an Olympian. Mm. She's a gold medalist. She's a superstar. I look up to her, but... She's got a bum and two legs and shoulders and a head, and she's just a person.
Yeah.
And she's a good person. How do people who, whether or not it's, you know, stepping into whatever challenge, sporting or not, build confidence, build self-esteem, and build self-belief?
Can I tell you that's not often my kind of natural state. My natural state is to to doubt myself.
I know, that's exactly why I'm asking you, yes. Right? Because I know that you and I were talking about someone that we won't mention before we came to air, quite a well-known person as well, who outwardly you would go all super confident, but underneath that you'd go actually not confident and quite insecure I go, yeah, that's me too. Like, yeah. I don't even think that's a bad thing. I think it's a human thing.
No.
And so, like, there's been lots of self-doubt and lots of probably overthinking and overanalyzing for you, but you've still done all this amazing shit. Talk to us about how you did that despite that.
Yeah, and that's obviously where the real challenge lies, because I think no matter what we're doing and what challenges come up, it certainly has been for me. So how do you do it? It's a really good question. I think for me, it's just the doing. Mm. I think that there's an element for me of not wanting to say no to opportunities.
Yeah.
So I kind of like putting myself out there. Mm. As I said before, like, I've always attacked things from a physical point of view and from that outside of that other point of view. You're just putting yourself out there, taking your chance. And I don't know, maybe it comes back to, you know, when I was first leaving Bemorm, does it matter if it doesn't go right?
100%.
It doesn't matter because what's the worst? And probably that's the thing that I do ask. What's the worst thing that can happen? And in some of these things, the stakes are higher than others. Of course they are. Mm. But I always kind of come back to, well, really the worst thing that can happen is, I'm emceeing an event for the Commonwealth Games Association. It's their President's Dinner on Friday night. And, you know, there's some big names in that room.
So this coming Friday night.
This coming Friday night. And, it's an important time for the Commonwealth Games because there's quite a bit of pressure.
100%. For God's sake, don't fuck it up, Sherelle.
Correct. Correct.
No, I just wanted to coach you then.
No, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah? That's actually great advice. Here's my advice.
Don't fuck it up. No pressure.
You won't believe it. Oh, I probably shouldn't
say
this.
See what I did there? No, go on.
This is a tangent, but I hand the bibs out. One of my roles as the assistant coach with the Vixens is handing the positional bibs out to the girls just before they go.
Wow, haven't you skyrocketed? Yep.
And that's exactly what I said to them, each person, as I handed them out before every single game this year.
Yeah. What? Don't fuck it up. That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
No, Mum, I actually didn't say that. But
what I think is, isn't it good to have fun? Like, it's
correct.
You know what? You're going to go out and do, yes. I've done... You know, all the things that I've done, some have gone great and some have gone shit.
Yeah, that's right.
But you're still here.
Yeah.
You know, and you've had games that were awesome and games that were good and games that you wouldn't have been happy with and results that you hated and, you know, injuries and all that stuff. But here you are. You've got kids. You're married to a great bloke. Your life has gone on and you're in a different place. Now you're sitting having a conversation about all of these things. Life is just life.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that we have to be okay with, I don't even want to say failure, because as soon as
it's
say...
It's not as black and white as that
Well,
either.
No, but it's really, it's an experience. Like, think about, well, what is a failure? Because let's say we all go for a run, fuck that, but let's say us three go for a run And we all run 30 minutes for 5Ks. Well, I go, fuck, that's amazing. And you go, that's super slow. I'm disappointed. And Melissa goes, oh, that's all right. Right? Mm. So same task, yep. same outcome,
yep.
same distance, same pace, same total time. I think it's terrific because I can't fucking run 5Ks. You're an elite athlete. You go, I'm shit. That's pathetic.
Oh, I hate myself.
6 minute Ks. What the fuck am I doing? And Melissa goes, no, that's about right.
Yeah, that's about right.
Right. And so even then, results are only results until we attach our thinking to them.
Yep.
And then we tell ourselves a story. And the story is, I failed. That's a failure. Or here's another story. That wasn't the outcome I want. What can I learn?
Mm.
That wasn't what I hoped to do or create. What's the lesson here? What could I do better? Is this, you know, all things considered, yeah. is this really a fucking catastrophe?
Yeah.
Because you think about what is life? Life happens externally, all these things. You know, we do a gig, we play a game, we open a business, we have kids, we MC an event, and then, and all these things happen on a practical, physical level. And then in the middle of that is us, the overthinker, who tells ourselves a story about it.
Mm.
And then your emotional, psychological, and physiological consequence is going to be dependent on that story. Mm. So when you go, oh, I fucked it up, I'm a moron, everyone will hate me, oh, fuck, then you have a bad day. And then you're in an unproductive place, but then next week you forget that.
Yeah. And I think it's... you know, the doing helps too. You know, you can tell yourself a story about something. I did 2 days at the Melbourne Cup Spring Carnival over the weekend. I don't know what your moral standpoint on horse racing is, but I was working there with the radio station that I work with for 6 hours.
Who do you work with?
RSN.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, RSN. So Daniel Harford, I'm sure you would know. And Adam White, I'm not sure if you know Adam White, but...
I know of him. I know Half.
Yeah, so I do... they have a breakfast, just a sports radio program on every morning. So I work with them on a Wednesday morning. I've been there this morning.
Hmm.
And so one of the things they asked me to do was this. So six hour shifts, both on Thursday and Saturday. And
so you do 6 hours?
Well, not normally, but at the races, this is what was put to me. Right. So, and I thought, well, I've got almost zero idea about horse racing.
Did you frock up?
I did frock up, although there was really no point because the room that we're in was far smaller than this.
Right.
And so we kind of weren't really out and about. But, you know, it would have been easy to go, oh, I'm not doing that because I don't know that much about racing. Is it the right thing for me to be doing? 6 hours is a lot. And so the first day I did it, I was kind of a bit awkward and trying to find my place. And then the next day I thought, well, you know what? I know what it's like now. This is the bit I did well. This is the bit I didn't do well. I'm going to do more of that, less of that. And in the end, on the Saturday for the 6 hours, it flew by in many ways. And I did offer to lease out my children at one point, but that's another story.
Any takers?
Not so far. Do you want two kids?
No.
No. They're good price. I'd give you a good price lease them.
I'm totally good.
Yeah, okay, good.
I will get a puppy. That will be it.
That will be enough.
Yep.
Anyway, so the point is that, you know, you can't get better. You're going to be thinking. You've got a new opportunity. It's a new chance. It's scary as hell.
Mm.
You do it. And then the next time you do it, it's actually not quite as scary and you'll be better at it, hopefully. And then the next time you do it and so on and so on. And so, you know, I think sometimes we build these things up to be more than what they are. We doubt ourselves. We put in our minds all the reasons why we can't do it and why we will be shit.
Yeah.
I swore. And, you know, in reality, you know, it's okay. It's okay.
And, you know, people are sick of hearing my shit, but I always say you can't get good at the thing you're not doing.
Exactly.
And you can't master what you avoid, right? Yeah. So what you did was you think about this. You did 6 hours on what was the first day? And 6 hours Friday.
Saturday.
So 6 hours Thursday, 6 hours Saturday. Now think about this. You went to the same place on the second day, did essentially the same thing with the same people in the same environment for the same amount of time and had a totally different experience.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And the totally different experience was not about where you were or what was required to be done or the time, or it was all about your perception because you were different. You went in thinking, you went in with a different understanding and a different mindset, and you actually had a different experience, which teaches us that the experience is a byproduct of thinking.
Mm.
Right? So you would have gone in with less anxiety, less stress, more confidence. Now, if you did that again next week, you'd be better again. Mm. And if you ended up, which you're not going to, but you ended up doing 50 of those by the 50th, you'd be a pro. You know what I mean? You'd be super comfortable and competent and confident. And the challenge is for us, like just what you did, you went and did something that you aren't particularly good at necessarily in that space of horse racing or familiar with, or, and you went, well, fuck, I'll open the door, I'll go in, I'll do it. You didn't die. You went, and you know what else? I didn't die, but I learned a few things. So I'm going to take those things and apply them for the next one.
Yeah.
Have you got a question for, I'm going to ask Sherelle a question, but I know she's a fucking Nettie fan. So she's probably didn't sleep last night.
Oh God.
She's quite tall too, but very uncoordinated. Yeah, but no, she's not.
You don't want to see me play netball, that's for sure.
So one of the questions one of the questions that I ask, what have we got? We've got 3 minutes, four minutes. One of the questions I ask is, if everything goes great for you on Planet Sherelle for the next 5 years, what might be happening in your world in 5 years if everything goes to plan or if everything goes great? What might you be doing? What might your situation be? And what might be, apart from having Simone's job?
Apart from having that. That's a really good question. I think probably for me it would be continuing that work in that media space with RSN or potentially, you know, expanding that role, because I'd love working on radio. So I would love to expand that if there was opportunities in that space. I'd probably be coaching my daughter at one of her first games of netball and working definitely still in that coaching space. Whether it is still at the Vixens or 5 years time, who knows where that would be, but perhaps exploring some other opportunities in that space, and living in a house that is a bit more, it's first world problems, but in a house that's got space for my in-laws and my parents to come and stay comfortably. So from like a physical kind of standpoint.
Practical.
Practical. There's that kind of consideration for me too.
Have you ever thought, and this is a conversation really for off air, but just quickly, because you're very good on the mic and I think you like it when you can, because right now you've got no responsibility at all in this moment other than just talking and having a conversation and thinking about things, and you're so busy and you've got so much shit on. I reckon you should have your own podcast.
Well, do you know Bianca and I do a podcast?
Oh, I didn't know. Oh. What's it called?
Bianca Chatfield and I, The Inner Circle. So it is.
Chatters, why haven't you told me this?
And Bianca Chatfield, why are you not spreading this?
Why haven't I not promoted it? Well, tell everyone where they can listen.
Well, you can listen at RSN. So it's kind of under that umbrella, rsn.net.au and all through the normal channels that you get your podcasting from. So we were doing a weekly netball podcast where we were chatting a little bit about what was happening in the games themselves. But for us, it was more about getting different perspectives on things. So there was a week where the umpires were in the news a little bit because of how they were responding. So we got an umpire on to talk to them. We got Lisa's been on a couple of times, a couple of athletes, not many, but so giving a different view on that. But I agree. I think that there's space for me in outside netball. But
I think, definitely, because the beauty of podcast is, I mean, this is a fancy setup for a podcast.
It is.
But you definitely don't need this.
No.
You know, you can literally spend $600 or $800 and get a really good recording thing, a couple of decent mics, and somebody with probably a couple more tech skills than you and I.
Well, Bianca's got it.
She's
maybe
all
she
over
can
it.
She can be my
She's
IT
all over it.
Girl.
So Melissa.
Yes, I do have a question.
Yes.
The year when you snapped your Achilles, you're obviously at the top of the game and very well respected, and probably that wasn't your plan for the year, I'm guessing. Mm. How did you cope with that kind of mentally and emotionally when things didn't go to plan?
Yeah, it was really tough. That was probably one of the toughest, and I know it's, you know, people go through far worse, but that was one of the toughest things because, as I mentioned before, we were coming off the back of our Delhi experience, which was probably the second toughest. It was really challenging, that experience, and then losing in...
What happened? What's the Delhi experience?
Oh, Delhi was the Commonwealth Games. So the living quarters...
my audience are
excuse
going,
me,
I don't
what's
know
the Delhi
about.
Experience? Sorry, yeah. I alluded to it before.
Non-netball audience.
Commonwealth Games, living conditions were pretty challenging. Yeah. I had Delhi belly for the entire time. I think I lost 5 kilos. You know, logistically it was challenging on many, many levels. And then we played the game, played extra time because the scores were level. Scores were still level. Went into double extra time, played 15 minutes nearly of double extra time and then lost. So we in inverted brackets, won the silver medal or lost the gold medal, depending on how you look at it, Craigo. And so, on the back of that as the captain, we were absolutely gung-ho on making some really big shifts on the way we went about things because there were some things in there that I really wasn't happy with as a leader. So I felt like that opportunity was kind of taken away from me a little bit.
Okay.
So that was – it was really hard. And, one of – do you remember Chelsea Nash?
Yeah.
Chelsea Nash was one of my teammates at the time with the Vixens, and she would say to me, she said, I'll be just driving along and I have to pull the car over because I burst into tears when I think about you snapping your Achilles.
Wow. Oh, really?
And so that's the level of – I mean, she was someone who was very close to me, but – that's the response I had from everyone was shattered for me. So I was trying to manage that and everyone else's emotions and my own emotions with it. And it was really tough. But as with all things, I speak to our physio now that took me through that rehab process. And he was like, people come to talk to him about how he rehabbed my Achilles because I got back so quickly.
Wow.
Because as you know, once I'm like, I'm doing it. So when he said, hey, what do you think about going for just trying a little jog? Now, with an Achilles, you have to learn how to walk again. You literally, there's nothing. There's just skin hanging off a shin bone.
Yes.
And so I was not going to be tentative. If I was going to be jogging, I'm going to be jogging to the best of my ability. Mm. And then when he said, how about doing a little jump? So I was doing it the best that I could. So that helped me. Okay. I was working on that every day. Yeah. I was in training and doing that. So that kind of laser focus helped.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was bloody tough. Yeah. It was bloody tough. And even knowing your role within that organization – was tough.
So I was the captain.
Yeah, the captain of both the Diamonds and the Vixens at the time. So then I'd come into training and I'd be limping around and my crutches going, well.
And it's hard when you understandably not feel sorry for yourself.
You do a bit.
You do. Yeah, I would too. And then you've got to go, it's all right, girls, we're all good. And you're like, fuck off. I don't want to say that. I don't feel like that.
No.
All right, but you've got to go. So if people want to, where can people listen to you on RSN, is it?
On RSN, yes.
RSN. And do you have a website? Do you have anything? Are you on Insta?
I'm on Insta and Facebook and Twitter and all those things. So just the normal ways of getting in contact with me.
And
so
your home phone number is? Sherelle McMahon, it's been nice. Thank you so much. Love your guts. Thank you for coming in. And love your guts, everybody else.
Thank you. What? What?
You're
pointing at me.
I'm pointing at you.
I'll finish.
Right,
no, I'll finish by saying
there are
some people
yes.
that I've come across in my life who yes. are good for my soul, and yes. every time I catch up and see you, it's amazing.
Cry. I've cried a lot lately.
I'm not trying to make you cry, but quite seriously, people ask me about the biggest influences on my career, and if I take it out of my actual netball playing career, you without a shadow of a doubt have had one of the biggest impacts on me and how I view life and approach things. So thank you for having me on. It's been a really great experience to catch up again.
Well, I love you and you're awesome and you're an inspiration and you're welcome and I'm glad I was a tiny, tiny fucking
far
support
bigger
crew.
Than
yeah, sure it was. Sherelle McMahon, I'm going to go and have a cry. See everyone. Love your guts. Oh, I love this job. What a great job. Just talking about stuff, interesting conversations, interesting explorations into the way we think and behave and choose and do and create on planet Us. This wouldn't happen without the support of my major sponsor, Max's and Maxine's. So thank you guys for providing great supplements to Australia for over three decades and to me personally for a decade or so. My abs and I thank you. If you need to get in shape, if you want that part of that process to be well supplemented, then head to maxes.com.au or maxinesburn.com. That's kind of the ladies' area. Maxes is more the dudes, but there's a bit of interchange there. So I know lots of girls who use Maxes products as well, either or both. Thanks for your support, Maxes, and thanks for being a part of this, everybody.